The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, describe your desk here at work for us.
Well, today it's a little messy. I have some stacks of paper. I have a tiger. I have Cloaca Ave, my sign. And just a bunch of other myriad objects there.
Yeah?
Yeah, I've got a beautiful leaf. Photos. A Ginsu knife.
Yeah?
Yeah. You?
Well, mine's a lot neater now. Like, we moved locations shortly after my son arrived. So for the longest, my desk was pretty messed up because it was just like a pile of art that I wanted to somehow stick to our art-resistant surfaces around our desk area, like the wall. It's not really a cubicle, but just I'm lucky enough to have two surfaces, like the wall in front of me and the wall beside me. But it's made in a way to where you can't – it's really difficult to stick things to.
It's true.
And the only way you can really do it is like this sort of complex system where you use pins and tape at the same time and kind of like – sew your art into the wall, and it takes forever. So
I think Holly's doing that.
Yeah, it's really the only way to do it. So for the longest, my desk was just like piles of notes for podcasts, books strewn about, a monitor that I didn't have hooked up yet, it's just awful.
I saw it as a fortress of papers and books, like you were walling everybody out.
I know it probably looked pretty bad with the monitor too, because the monitor was not hooked up, and it was like between me and Jonathan Strickland, as if I was never going to hook up this monitor and I was going to use it solely as a divider. And so I'm glad to have that hooked up so that people can see, oh, he's not just a
it's
jerk.
It's not just defensive clutter.
Yeah, he was going to go somewhere with that at some point. So
yeah. Well, we are going to talk today about spaces, orderly spaces, chaotic spaces. How do they affect us? And I will say that I do like a nice orderly space, but when I'm working on a project, things spiral sort of everywhere. And that makes sense to me because I'm referencing a lot of different things, but I might be an order muppet.
An order muppet. Okay. This is the idea that, of course, we have chaos and order, the two great movements in life, right?
Mm-hmm.
A movement towards order, a movement away from order. And, of course, to quote Wallace Stevens, the poet, a violent order is a disorder, and a great disorder is an order, and these two things are one. So it's a complicated topic. There's a lot of back and forth. But a simplified way is to indeed look at Jim Henson's The Muppets and divide them into agents of order and agents of chaos.
That's right. Dahlia Lithwick, writing for Slate, talked about this. This idea that you either fall into one of two categories, chaos muppet, which are out of control, emotional, volatile. They tend toward, this is her saying this, they tend toward the blue and fuzzy. They make their way through life in a swirling maelstrom of food crumbs, small flaming objects, and the letter C. We're talking about Cookie Monster, Ernie, Grover, Gonzo, Dr. Bunsen, Honeydew. Animal. And she says Zelda Fitzgerald. Here's a historical figure who was a chaos muppet.
Ah, okay.
But on the other side, you've got your order muppet. And she said she's thinking about Bert, Scooter, Sam the Eagle, Kermit, of course, right?
Yes.
And the blue guy who is perennially harassed by Grover at restaurants. She says the order muppet, every man, that blue guy. They tend to be neurotic, highly regimented, averse to surprises, and may sport monstrously large eyebrows. She says that they represent the responsibility of running the world, and they feel weighed down by it, but they secretly revel in the knowledge that they keep things afloat.
Okay, yeah.
Which are you?
Well, we were talking about this earlier, and I'm still struggling to come up with an answer because I'm definitely not the guy who threw the swordfish. Like, that's like, to me, like, he and an animal are right up there, like the extremes of Chaos Muppet. Gonzo, too, really. They are right up there at the threshold of utter chaos. And then, of course, on the other end, you have Sam the Eagle, I guess, would be like the most orderly Muppet. Because Kermit will wave his arms around a bit, but Sam is a rock, and he's going to stick to it no matter what. And I feel like I'm maybe a little more towards the middle, so it's hard to. I mean, maybe some of the members of the band were a little more balanced and laid back, but I don't think I'm Dr. T.
I see you as both, because I have seen you as the Chaos Muppet when you're working and you're in the middle of something. Mm-hmm. But I have also seen you as the Order Muppet who every 6 months goes around the office and says, why is all this junk around? And cleans things up, and you get rid of all the jars of urine and whatnot hanging around. So
well,
I see both.
Huh. Well, maybe I'm kind of like the count. Because the count is, there's...
Yes.
Yes, the count. One, two, three. Because he's orderly in a very, he's all about the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But his obsession with the numbers tends to disrupt everything else in his life. So I feel like maybe I'm not saying that it's a 1-to-1 comparison, but I feel like I'm kind of that kind of mix where there are parts of me that are very orderly, but sometimes those get in the way of other stuff and causes disorder over here. I'm kind of in flux, I guess.
Well, I'm with Dahlia Lithwick. She says that she is a faux chaos muppet.
Yeah.
But at the center is order.
Well, what about you?
That's what I'm saying. I'm with her on that.
You're a faux chaos muppet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. But it also depends on the situation and my environment and everybody's environment, as we'll discuss. But the thing is, those chaos muppets, they always get a bad rap, right? Because
yes.
Of the surroundings, they don't look so good, and people perceive them as, you know, just sort of layabouts who can't even be bothered to clean up their spaces. And in fact, it brings to mind the broken windows theory.
Right. The idea that that the way that you ultimately combat social upheaval and problems of crime is that you focus on all the little things. You focus on, say, that broken window or some graffiti. Because if the windows are broken, if there's graffiti on the wall, it's sending this message to everyone else that minor transgressions are okay.
Right.
And therefore, we can extrapolate that less minor infractions are okay as well. And then it becomes more and more chaotic. It builds up like kibble.
Yeah, like one broken window begets several broken windows, and then all of a sudden you've got mayhem going on.
Right.
And I think about the Krog Street Tunnel in Atlanta as an example of a graffiti-ridden tunnel, but also an example of extreme creativity. In fact, on any given day, you can pass by this tunnel and see people getting their photograph taken in front of it or making videos in front of it, because ultimately it's this stand-in for an act of creativity.
Yeah, it's a graffiti-free zone, and I think about this a lot. Every time I go past it, I wonder about the graffiti-free zones and to what extent, basically what effect they have on creativity.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a situation where suddenly it's not just like a daring graffiti artist can go there and tag.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just, you know, somebody throwing up some sort of a gang tag either. It's everybody, even people who would normally not even think about it.
Well, the Krog Tunnel does have a good amount of very interesting art. And what I think is interesting about it is that it requires you to stop and take a second look.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of this idea that we're going to look at when we talk about spaces, in particular workspaces, clutter versus order.
Yes. All right, so as luck would have it, we have a study that looks at how chaotic versus clean, neat, and orderly environments affect our productivity, affect our creativity, affect our response to stimuli. Because, again, to your point, we tend to put it in a quick Felix and Oscar odd couple scenario, right? Where one is the slob and one is the orderly individual.
Mm-hmm.
And the slob is just, he's just a slob. All he's doing is contributing to the comedic environment, but that's about it. This study reveals it's a lot more nuanced than that. And it's actually a really good study for those of us whose desk get a little bit chaotic from time to time. The title of this study is Physical Order Produces Healthy Choices, Generosity, and Conventionality, Whereas Disorder Produces Creativity. It's a 2013 paper from the Carlson School of Management at the University of Minnesota. And it basically revolves around three different experiments involving an orderly work environment and a disorderly work environment.
Yeah, and let's just read out the first line, because I think this sets the tone. The first line is, order and disorder are prevalent in both nature and culture, which suggests that each environment confers advantages for different outcomes. So it's not so black and white as the order and the chaos Muppets.
Yeah, it's not a situation where, all right, we have the orderly Muppets and the chaos Muppets are just tearing down society. Like,
mm-hmm.
both have survived. Both have are here due to an evolutionary process, so they must both be important. Like I always come back to the cuttlefish, and about how you have these larger cuttlefish that are mating, and you have the masculine cuttlefish who are all about brute strength and just making sure they get their mate that way, and then you have the sneakier, smaller cuttlefish
yeah.
who disguise themselves as females. And the ultimate take home there is that cuttlefish evolution has favored both styles, both types of cuttlefish, and ultimately both types of cuttlefish are necessary for the survival of the species. And so we see a similar thing with disorder Muppets and order Muppets in human society.
And you see this in this study, which is so interesting because, as you mentioned, there are three experiments that Kathleen DeVos and the other researchers conducted. And in the first experiment, they randomly assigned a group of college-age students to spend time in adjacent office spaces. One was tidy. The other was cluttered with papers and other work-related detritus. And the students spent their time filling out questionnaires that were unrelated to the study. So
right.
the students didn't know really why they were there. After 10 minutes, they were told they could leave, and they were offered an apple or a chocolate bar. Okay, so those students who sat in the orderly office were twice as likely to choose the apple than those who sat amid the chaotic mess of papers. In addition, when the participants were presented with the opportunity to donate to a charity, those placed in the orderly room donated more of their own money.
Interesting.
Okay, so what's coming out of this, the pro, I guess you could say, for the orderly room here is that we were talking about more civic-minded behavior, more generous and conscientious, at least in terms of their diets.
Yes.
You know, they're minding their P's and Q's.
Now, what strikes me about this experiment is I inevitably draw back to our podcast about symbols and the power of symbols and the idea, too, about enclothed cognition, that our clothing is a kind of symbol that informs how we behave and how we carry ourselves. And here we see a physical environment that is a symbol for order, a symbol for what is expected of us, a symbol for cleanliness, and that kind of translates into our mind in terms of cleanliness of ethics, cleanliness of our dietary habits, and just an interesting insight into how spaces control our behavior.
So yeah, back to the broken window theory. If you're in that room that's cluttered and messy, apparently nobody has been paying attention.
Yeah.
You could eat that chocolate bar. You don't need to give that much money to charity, right?
Yeah. And it also reminds me of the Panopticon. You know, because the Panopticon is, of course, a structure of order. And if things are disorderly, then you're thinking, well, I guess nobody's watching. It doesn't matter. But if everything is lined up, if everything seems to be in this heightened state of order, then you also feel like you're more responsible for your actions.
Okay, so if you out there are messy desk dwellers, you probably want to get vindicated here, and you will in the next study.
Yeah, so similar deal. Participants were put into either the messy room with disorder everywhere, or they were put into the nice, clean, orderly room. But this time they're asked to come up with new uses for ping pong balls. And of course, which makes me wonder how many different uses can you find for ping pong balls? They're pretty specific in what you can do with them. But I'll leave that to everyone's imagination. anyway, the result. Overall, participants in the messy room came up with the same number of ideas for new ways to use these ping pong balls as the clean room counterparts. But their ideas were rated as more interesting and creative when evaluated by the judges.
So independent judges,
yeah,
by the
way. Independent judges. They, yeah, they were judging the, just like a list of ideas, mm-hmm. brainstormed ideas for what you could do with a pair of ping pong balls. And it, anyway, so ultimately we're showing here that participants in the disorderly room were more creative. They were able to come up with more novel ideas for what to do with those ping pong balls, which, again, a very limited object to have to brainstorm around, than their clean room counterparts.
So making this case that creativity or the ability to take a risk in your thought process is also borne out in their final experiment, in which they were given the choice of adding a health boost to their lunchtime smoothie that was labeled either new or classic. Guess who chose the classic?
Well, the classic is going to be chosen by the clean room people because they want to stick with something that is proven, that is established. Mm-hmm. They're not going to take any risk on some sort of newfangled smoothie additive.
That's right. But those in the messy room, they were like, bring it on. Yeah. I want the new formula.
Let's go crazy with this smoothie. Just put everything in it. I don't care. Wood chips, vitamins.
Ping pong balls.
Ping pong balls. Yeah, the ping pong ball smoothie was born of this experiment, I bet.
Yeah, so that messy environment can actually cause people to feel inspired to break free of tradition, right? To say, okay, that window is broken. Let's do something with that. Let's make some artwork out of it.
You know, I feel like at times it even helps to have like a disorder avatar to turn to, you know, like yeah. like a figure like an animal or a Hunter S. Thompson, where you sort of think around them, you sort of live vicariously through them for a few moments, mm-hmm. and it has an overall creative benefit to you.
Sort of like a spirit animal?
Yeah, like, you know, you have a spirit animal is animal, and you can sort of draw from that. And yeah, and at least for a little bit, as you sort of bask in his glow, you're able to feel a little more liberated, a little bit more daring in your ideas.
All right, let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to try to get at the bottom of why this creativity and this sort of inspiration and perhaps even learning are linked to messy environments.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astaproallergy.com. Astapro and go. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
All right, we're back. And, you know, just real quick, you know, talking about working in disorderly environments, chaotic environments, and I think to coffee shops again, a place where both you and I work in coffee shops a lot, and there's a lot of really interesting history about the coffee shop's role in creative thought in Western culture. And that is a chaotic environment in the best of situations, because you have people ordering different drinks, you have all sorts of weird sounds, of the espresso, you know, God knows what kind of music they're going to play, people right. coming in and out, and if you're lucky, it's a variety of people. So it's, you know, it's beautiful people, ugly people, people, you know, from the top of the ivory tower, people who sleep under the tower, all coming into the same space, and I, for one, feel that creative energy rolling off of it.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about the period of enlightenment and this convergence of coffee houses, people turning away from the liquor, from the alcohol, and mm-hmm. going toward coffee as a stimulant, and as a result, sharing more of their ideas in this community-centered sort of area. And the same thing today is going on. Although a lot of us are wearing headphones, you do get exposure to everyone.
Yeah.
And so it does make sense to me that the chaos of all of that might create these associations that would help you kind of ping pong around until you get these novel associations, these novel ideas. In fact, it really helps when you're studying a topic, and most people think, oh, when I go to study, it should be in a quiet, orderly room. But there is a New York Times article called Forget What You Know About Good Study Habits. And it says, in a classic 1978 experiment, psychologists found that college students who studied a list of 40 vocabulary words in two different rooms, one windowless and cluttered and the other modern with a view of the courtyard, did far better on a test than students who studied the words twice in the same room. And later studies have confirmed the finding for a variety of topics. So the idea here is that the outside context is varied, the information is enriched, and this slows down the forgetting process, because the more layers of chaos, I guess you could say here, the more sort of patterns and things that you have to take in, data, the more points of association your brain makes to whatever it is that you are concentrating on at that very moment. And yeah. So it becomes a stickier memory for people.
Yeah, and it lines up kind of well with what Wallace Stevens says about the more chaos you have, the chaos kind of becomes an order. And the more order you have, it kind of comes more and more chaotic. Now, in talking about learning and chaos, one has to visit the world of the child, of the toddler, of the baby, because, for one thing, as we've touched on many times before, humans are natural born scientists. Even the very little wee ones, their brains are open to the world. They have this lamp-like view of things. They're bringing in all this data. But at the same time, they often seem to be agents of chaos. They seem to revel in making a mess. They seem to know no other way of life than to smear it on the wall, on their face, to eat noodles with their hands, and then rub their pesto-covered fingers through their hair.
I mean, never was there a better chaos Muppet than any child,
yes,
particularly at the age of two.
Yeah, they are all animal, with maybe a little Gonzo or the swordfish dude thrown in for that whole period of time.
I actually had a professor in college who said that the reason why children love animals and stories is that they tend to really align with them and be like, and see themselves as animals, unpredictable and crazy and running around.
Yeah.
Until they get more of their humanness under their belts. But in this case, there is a study that shores up this idea that this animal-like behavior is helpful in learning things.
Yes, researchers at the University of Iowa studied how 16-month-old children learn words for non-solid objects. So we're talking about stuff like oatmeal, glue,
peas,
you know, mucus, all the various non-solid objects that may be coming out or going into your child. There's a lot of traffic there. Now, previous research.
Peas coming out for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. Out the nose. It just happens. Now, the previous research on this topic had shown that toddlers learn more readily about solid objects because they can easily identify them due to their unchanging size and shape. So an apple is always shaped like an apple, whereas apple sauce, you know, is shaped like whatever the container is. That's basic physics, and they get it, and their brain is processing that data. So, but the previous data said, yeah, that as far as the oozy stuff, the running stuff, the applesauce, the snot, the peas, the what have you, they're maybe not as good about identifying that stuff. Now, what this study did, the researchers decided to test this. They said, is this really the case, or is this just, you know, our bias on this particular situation? So they exposed 16-month-olds to 14 non-solid objects. Mostly it was food and drink stuff, like, you know, applesauce and pudding and soup. And then they presented the items and gave them made-up words. So, like, some of the examples were like Dax and Kiv. Non-words used to identify these various gooey foods.
So this is this idea that there to be purity here. So there's no associations with other words that they might have learned in relation to this.
Exactly.
Just to test what the sort of information they would retain by interaction with this food.
Exactly. And then a minute passes, and they ask the children to identify the same foods in different sizes or shapes. So, you know, again, different containers, different visual presentation of this non-solid object. And so this required the youngsters to go beyond relying simply on shape and size and to explore what the substances were made of to make the identification. So you can see where this is going in terms of how toddlers behave with gooey foods and how you might interact with them. So, of course, they started prodding it and probing it and mushing it up in their fingers and smearing it on their bodies, throwing it at the walls, watching the noodles worm their way down, right, rubbing it into their heads, just this ecstasy of handling the non-solid stuffs.
And this tactile experience actually allowed those toddlers to learn, to better learn the names of foods when they got to play with them.
Yeah.
Which I love this idea because all of a sudden everything in that world makes sense. As a parent, when your kid is lobbing this disgusting liquefied peas at your face,
yeah,
you think, ah, yes, you're learning, my love. You're learning.
It transforms this moment where they're playing with pricey organic applesauce or something, you know, and you're just like, oh, you're wasting your food. You're playing with it. Why don't you eat it? And it turns that into this fabulous moment of, oh, you were discovering the universe.
Right.
You were learning, you were using your tactile senses to better identify non-fluid objects. It's the kind of study that makes parenting a little easier.
It really does. And you sent, some pictures of children, toddlers who were just covered in various kinds of pasta, including spaghetti.
Yes.
That I think, I don't know how you're going to feel about this. It made me want to jump in there with them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, see, this is, if you do a search, do like a Google image search for pasta party or toddler pasta party, baby pasta party, you have to play around with it a little bit. You will see images of this where generally it'll consist of like a very small child swimming pool filled with pasta noodles, cooked pasta noodles. And then there'll be some like naked or maybe diapered or swimsuited babies in there just lounging around with handfuls, just fistfuls of spaghetti, some of it in their mouth, you know, fisting it right into their mouth, smearing it on their bodies, noodles hanging off of them. And it can be a bit frightening, especially since some of the photography is good and some of it is a little sketchy looking.
Well, you see, you sent that to me, and I'm a really tactile person, and my first impulse was like, yeah, I want to feel that. I want to feel those spirals of pasta in my hands, and I want to squish them. I actually started to grit my teeth.
Well, I tell you, I first discovered this phenomena prior to having a son. And at the time, I was like, this is grim. This looks like something out of a horror movie. I want no part of this. Now I have to say that my thinking on it is, well, if I knew for certain that it would distract him for 30 minutes, I would totally fill a bathtub up with noodles. So it, your perspective on these changes, and certainly knowing what we know now from the study, I definitely see the value in it. Now, you could go a little overboard. You could decide that you need to throw a party for every non-fluid object or slightly squishier, gooey thing, and then you're just going to eat your food budget up.
I'm not a fan of the world peas in a kiddie pool. I'm going to stick to the pasta myself. But it does give you this idea that you have this this access to this rich patina of associations. If you're trying to figure out the world, if you're trying to explore it, name it, then the more you can add to that database, including tactile things that would allow you to know that this noodle is squishy or this noodle is spiral, this noodle is super long and thin, the more you can really get a bead on what this whole kind of human existence thing is.
Yeah, and certainly educators are onto this. You know, you go to a museum that really has a robust children's area, or a children's museum, a hands-on learning center. I mean, that's the kind of stuff they're gonna really push. It's not just look at the alligator. Here's a section of an alligator's hide or a representation of it that you can actually touch. Here is some. It's one thing to look at some sea life in the aquarium behind glass, but let's actually have a touch tank where you can reach in and actually have that tactile experience.
Right.
And all of that you know makes just so much more sense once you really dive into the data here.
I think as adults we should embrace this as well.
Yeah.
When we're learning new things. Perhaps not everybody would like to see us squishing pasta or other types of adventures,
right.
But, you know.
Well, I'm writing something for the website about chemical weapons right now.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
I'm probably not going to try any sarin or mustard gas or chlorine gas on my own just to have that tactile experience, because those are certainly non-solid objects.
I'm glad that you've made that decision not to do that.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, well, on that note, let's call the robot over and catch up on some listener mail. All right, this one comes to us from Jerry, who's responding to our Panopticon episode. He says, hello, Julie and Robert. I just finished listening to your episode on the Panopticon, which I found both interesting and informative. I am in the business of information security, and one aspect of the Panopticon as life concept that may not be obvious to all is that it isn't always a deterrent against antisocial behavior. In fact, it can have quite the opposite effect by inciting a segment of society into antisocial behavior. A great example of that is the Hacktivist Anonymous movement of the past few years. Now, those movements are all over the map in terms of motivations, but a common focal point is on the loss of privacy, liberties, and so on. As an observer, it's particularly interesting to watch as the establishments they are rebelling against use the very rebellion to justify additional laws which further erode those things that the activists are fighting for in the first place. I also think a key element of the movement is for participants to stay out of the eye of the Panopticon as they carry out protests by using various means of obfuscation, hence the name Anonymous. To carry on the analogy, the movement uses the gaps in the Panopticon's vision to hide their antisocial behavior, at least what those involved believe to be gaps, as recent prosecutions would lead one to realize the shadows are not as dark as they might seem. I think that is an important facet because I strongly suspect that the desire to rebel would be far smaller, if not non-existent, if those involved were carrying out their activities in the public eye, like social disobedience of days gone by. In respect, the Panopticon both drives them to rebel and drives them to do so only from the perceived blind spots of the watchful eye. Anyhow, I thought it was an interesting perspective that didn't come up on the show. Jerry.
I think that Jerry gives us so much to think about here because mostly, and I'm going to play a lot of devil's advocate here, but I think mostly that when we think about Anonymous or hacktivists, we tend to think of it more as them bringing transparency to previously hidden information. But what he is saying is very interesting in the fact that they're not out there front and center, actually allows them, people who are not necessarily trying to bring things to transparency, to be a little bit more devious, and that they should be out there front and center to actually enact justice. But the question is, do you think that they could? Do you think that the anonymous, the hacktivists, the people who are, you know, on the side of social justice, I should say, do you think that if they were there for us to see, that they could accomplish the same amount of information, is the question?
Yeah, I don't know. I have my doubts on that, too. It seems like, you know, to his point, the days of, like, pure social disobedience. I mean, you still see examples of it, but it's hard to imagine large masses of people engaging in it without masks these days.
Of course, he's coming at it from a security perspective, and so it's just really interesting to bring that to light. So, yeah, if anybody has any thoughts on that, I'd love to know, because this is a very rich argument, pro and con, and Jerry makes some really good points.
All right, well, here's another bit of listener mail related to the Panopticon episode. Hi, guys. Sean from Saskatoon here with the least to contribute to a conversation that I've ever had, insofar as my primary idea boils down to nothing. Sounds good. Do go on. He says, I believe that the normalization associated with having an all-seeing eye on you 24/7 does not necessarily lead to a perpetual state of stress or paranoia. We are not equipped to handle something like that, and those who do so not because of an external situation, but a chemical imbalance. It's the very basis for normalization. I'm thinking primarily of a study examining driving habits in the real world, where cameras were mounted in hundreds of people's cars for years to study how distracted or careful drivers were. They all knew they were under observation and got paid to be in the study every year in case they needed a reminder that they were being watched. They soon behaved as though they were quite alone, cavorting with ladies in the night in some cases, relieving themselves while driving, juggling multiple phones and a cigarette. Some behavior may be curbed due to cameras, as they are correlated with a decline in crime, but by and large, they are ignored and don't cause significant grief. There are obvious residents of London and New York, to cite two examples of cities almost entirely under CCTV observation, who feel that their rights are being violated and who rail against the intrusion. But, and I could be wrong here, there are probably people who would be railing against other government intrusion or civil rights violations where there are no cameras at all. This is a complicated issue, and I'm not a state security apologist, but the mere presence of cameras everywhere or the omniscience of government about all internet traffic doesn't really bug me nearly as much as their ability to act without a warrant. Keep up the great work. I look forward, as always, to your next philosophical, psychological, biological, and technological musings.
All right. Very good point here. Are we equipped to even deal with this idea that we're constantly being surveilled and perhaps under this construct that we are not, we just fold into it as the people who were being watched on these security cameras and their camera became normalized to the whole situation. So I think that's a good question, but I also wonder if it is part and parcel of the idea that's ingrained in all of us that when we get in the car, no matter if there's a camera watching us, we are in a private space, hence all the nose pickers on the highway.
Yes. Yeah. It's always kind of better than that is when you see somebody really dancing out to music, though.
Yeah.
I always like that. Well, you know, here's a little bit of listener mail. It comes in response to our Cubicle Doom episode, which has some crossover into the Panopticon area. This one, Louis writes in and says, hey, guys, I'm catching up on old episodes, and I thought I'd toss in my two cents about pink noise. Years ago, I worked at a startup web company, and we, unbeknownst to the workers, had a pink noise generator in the building. This all came to light in the summer when the temperatures were really hot, and the electric company was asking larger office buildings to shut down non-essential electrical devices. The pink noise makers were deemed to be such devices. I worked in a cubicle farm, and the change was instant and dramatic. While the pink noise was on, you couldn't hear a phone conversation for more than about a cubicle away. When the pink noise was off, you could clearly hear the same conversation from five cubes over. To this point, everyone assumed that we were always hearing the air handling system, until our maintenance person pointed out that the tiny one diameter speakers in the ceiling spaced about 70 to 10 feet apart. Thank you for all the great content. Out of about 30 different podcast series I listen to on a regular basis, you are my favorite. Thank you again, Louis.
All right. Thanks, Louie. So that's nice, because that angle is a benevolent panopticon that was looking out for them, piping in some pink noise. And in our new office space, I really wish that we had the same scenario.
It would be kind of cool. Yeah. Certainly an example here, though, where they didn't necessarily believe in God till God stopped believing in them, if you think of God as a pink noise machine.
Okay.
All right. Here we have a quick bit of listener mail from Eric. Eric writes in response to our cute episode, The Science of Cute. He says, I wonder how many people react to too much cute or attempts at cute that fail. In Harry Potter, Dolores Umbridge is described as a horrid person who displays many cute kittens in her rooms. The pictures were called horrid in the books, not cute. And Umbridge herself tries to sound and dress cute, but was grossly overweight and looked like a toad in the book. I wish you had talked about what happens when people go for cute and end up in the opposite direction.
Well, I think that's that whole caricature thing, right? When someone takes something to an extreme, then it becomes the uncanny valley or horrific. And I think about that when I think about clowns, no offense to clowns out there, or even drag performance.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it is such a performance of the female model that it looks, what is the word that I'm going for? Ghoulish.
Ghoulish, yeah. Maybe part of it is just our ability to, you know, to see those patterns and to realize something is not right. This this individual or this thing, the cute, is trying way too hard, and therefore it must cover up some sort of malign instinct at the heart of it. That's not really a cute cartoon character. There must be some sort of horrible monster inside of it that's going to eat me.
You know, I was thinking about that in the context of staring. Because we talked about this inability to look away when we should is just our mind trying to square what it's seeing, because it's saying this is outside of what I normally see. I can't stop looking. I need more data.
Exactly. Yeah. It all comes down to our processing of the world around us and trying to realize what's a risk to us, what's not really a risk, and how we should react.
So can cute be awful? Yes, it can.
Oh, yes. All right, so there you have it. Some interesting listener mail to cap off what I think was a really interesting insight into our orderly and disorderly lives.
Yeah, and a comforting aspect of why a child is making an incredible mess for you to clean up and peas are splattering on your walls.
Yeah, and the next time you're walking around at work and you notice, like I do, that some people have cubes that look like they've barely been moved into and other people look like they have lived there for centuries, understand that we need both types. We need the creative energy of the chaos. We need the refining order of that neat space as well. All of it comes together, and it has survived evolution for a reason.
Right, and we should flip between those spaces so we have a nice, balanced perspective.
There you go.
All righty.
All right, you want to check out our blog post? You want to check out all these podcast episodes that we're talking about, including ones that you will not find on iTunes? You need to go to stuffblowyourmind.com. That's our mothership. That's our main homepage. You will find, the blogs, the videos, the podcasts, all sorts of new content, as well as links out to all of our social media sites. You can find us on Facebook, Tumblr, Twitter, Google+. We're on YouTube as Mind Stuff Show. There's a SoundCloud account if you're into that. You can find episodes there. Just have at it.
Yep, and if you strongly identify with Muppet, let us know which Muppet that is, and you can do so at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 Gs in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.